SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 15 in, and off of a fun conversation with Gory Smith. Really appreciate two things. Kip Elser made that connection for me because I reached out to Kip this morning. And, of course, Kirkwood Stables, and Kip is filling out the roster of trainees, yearlings into two-year-old in training sale types. And I knew because of the South Carolina tie, I thought, let me try Kip. And sure enough, Kip said, you know, I knew we're little, but the guy you want is Gory Smith. And so that was really fun. And I guess now the next Smith we need is going to be Jason, Hammy's son. Now that he's got a winner, he's made four starts so far. And he'll build his career from there. We go to Maine for what I don't think it'll be the last time we ever talk to Seth in Maine, but this is emotional. It's emotional for me, and I only went there three times. But the ancestral home, the compound, the famed Merrow compound in Falmouth, it's got to be very emotional for everybody. Seth, good morning.
It is, and I will wish the place goodbye for you and Tina as well as we walk out the door for the final time, and probably about 4 hours or so due to closing a little bit later. But it was time, and the couple who were moving in, really nice youngish couple, and they're going to make the most of it, I'm sure, as it is very easy to do at this place. But yeah, I'm actually sitting in the living room on a lawn chair, because I brought in a couple of chairs from the deck. There is nothing else in the house right now. Cleaned it out over the past few days. Loaded up a truck to take some furniture, taking some stuff back to my place in Boston Spa, and a sister from Arkansas is taking some stuff down there. But yeah, it's it serves us well. So, but as you say, I will be back many times in the future to Maine.
All right, well, we're counting on you to find some place and buy some place so that Tina and I, you know, have a vacation spot.
We'll check in when I start to look around.
We are America's guests.
I always said, though, we were happy to have you up here. I mean, it's such a beautiful spot, and we rented it out most of the year, and it was open all summer. But, you know, my siblings and I came up and took some time, but there was always time free, and it's just... It was crazy to have it sitting empty, so it was always fun to have somebody take advantage.
And we did, and we loved it. And I had never. It's funny. My brother went to New England Music Camp, and that's we would go up there, and my mother would drag us up to Kittery, to the outlets when I was a kid. And my father's company owned a woolen mill called Wyandotte. Around Waterville, and so we would go up there, but never really had, we never had like any time up there beside day trips, and I guess maybe I can't really remember any hotel stays when I was young. We used to go to the Cape, and that was a different story, North Truro, and also Buzzards Bay, but. The day trips up to Maine, this was our first opportunity, mine, to really stay for any length of time. It was those three, vacations that Tina and I took, and we just loved it. And, it's what's amazing is there's so much coastline, and not, you don't even have to be tied to the coast. You can go inland up into the national park, and I mean it's so majestic, and there's so many things to see and places to explore. It really, and that was a great base, because you're up a little bit, just north of Portland, and it's a great launching point to go further north too.
Yeah, there was the years ago I went up. Where is it exactly? I'd have to look it up now. But they do a great Maine film, kind of a school thing in the summertime. You know, it's not school age people necessarily. It's prominent people in the film industry give classes, and I can't think. It's maybe an hour and a half or so up from here. And years ago, I went up and sat in on a couple of things up there. And there's all kinds of things. I will say, for folks who've never been up here, and if you're in driving distance, I highly recommend it, because Portland has become a funky little city, and we kind of realized it this week. My two sisters and my brother-in-law are up here as well. And last couple of days, we've gotten shut out of places where we wanted to go to eat down in Portland, and you think, well, we're in October. And I kind of got it on Columbus Day, except that was the end of the Columbus Day weekend, but it was still crowded. And then last night it was Tuesday, and we got shut out of two places down in Portland. We were kind of in the car talking, and I guess it's become kind of a, you know, it has been for the last 20 years or so, a funky little city. But I guess it's also some of the restaurants are becoming well-known. They were talking about reading in one of the magazines, The Week, if people are familiar with that. They do some restaurants every week, and I guess in one of their recent issues, they kind of focused just on Portland restaurants and talked about it becoming kind of a foodie town. And so at first we were kind of thinking, oh, maybe it's Columbus Day weekend. And then we wondered, maybe it's just the new normal in Portland. It's just become kind of a spot now. But it has been for 20 years or so. The downtown, the old port area has become revitalized, and it's kind of fun. And then on the horse racing side, you have Scarborough Downs. And this time of year, you have the great fair action on the harness side of the game. Cumberland County Fair, I highly recommend that as well.
Nice. I love it. All right. Well, it's a traumatic day. Who got the picture of the high school, that really cool black and white frame?
My niece took the high school picture. Yeah, it was my father's high school, Deering High.
Deering High, there you go. Yeah. That was a very cool picture.
Yeah, that was fun.
Well, I'm going to get misty here. So
don't start, then you get me going.
we'll say thank you once again, because we loved it, and
we were happy to have, and you added the nice chairs out on the deck, and they were always a highlight of people in the neighborhood and whatnot. So
who got those?
Actually, we're leaving those. We're leaving the stuff out on the deck. We took all of the furniture, and we asked the new tenants, you just want us to leave that stuff out there? And they were like, oh, sure. Yeah. So they will live on.
Excellent. That's special. All right. That makes me feel good. That's a warm fuzzy. Well, let's get to what we missed. And you know, last week we did try. We were scuttling around trying to find you.
I meant to send you an email. I must have just totally zoned out. It was like 3 days later. I was like, oh, I completely, I don't know where I was or what I was doing, but yeah, I apologize for that.
No problem. It gives us a chance for you to, because you're very good at this, you get very organized and attack the Breeders' Cup. Get some thoughts in, Seth, as to what you observed and where your early framework is and, you know, what you're doing between now and entry time in a couple of weeks.
Well, certainly the last two weekends we had some division shake out a little bit. The 2-year-old division, I think, did. I thought Kenny McPeak's runner on Friday, Keeneland Restless Rider, looked pretty good. I thought in New York, Complexity looked pretty good. Certainly Complexity as compared to what we saw at Keeneland on the 2-year-old side with the upset. And I guess in California, it was just kind of a short field there, but game winner. So the filly out in California was probably okay. But as I say, I liked Restless Rider the other day. Going back to New York 2 weeks ago, again, I missed you, but Discreet Lover was just kind of a good story. But how that's going to shake out Breeders' Cup-wise, I'm not sure. On the flip side, a little later that day, Mind Your Biscuits, I thought with a win over the track, obviously it was an experiment for them the last couple of starts, two turns, where do they go? But I think with a win over the track in that Lucas, you take your shot at the Classic now, I think feeling fairly good in a handicap division that is maybe lacking a little bit, except for Southern California. Again, going out there, that was a pretty impressive performance as well. So, again, I think some of the divisions have shaken out over the past couple of weeks. I do want to toss in, I follow international racing. I know you watch it as well. For folks who don't, pull up the two performances from this weekend, Winx and Enable. They both had good storylines. Winx is that kind of horse. When I first got into the game, I liked Forgo. And people talk about Forgo for my generation, but they still toss out Silky Sullivan, who I just know through stories. But it was that same come-from-the-cloud style where really until they get to the last 100 yards or so, you don't think they're going to win. And Winx has that style and really played into it down in Australia Friday night our time and Saturday their time. So that it's just her running style. I went 28 straight for her now and 20-some great group ones. Just a phenomenal story down there. But Enable in the arc, you know, she just held off the oncomers. And I guess Frankie Dettori kind of admitted, I don't know how much horse I had left. But people have to put that in perspective. Again, for folks who maybe don't watch international racing, she had a little bit of a setback and went to the sidelines this year. So she hadn't been seen since the arc last year. One prep race at Kempton against three rivals. And then comes back and wins the Arc again on our side of the ocean. That's like a horse wins the Breeders' Cup Classic and then maybe goes to Delaware for a $50,000 stake and comes back and wins the Breeders' Cup Classic again. So that was a phenomenal performance as well. So the two females down in Australia and France were impressive. And again, for folks who don't watch international racing, go pull those up on YouTube and check them out. But again, New York, Southern California, Keeneland, there were clearly a lot of performances over the past couple of weekends that are going to play into the Breeders' Cup. That's starting to shake out now as the horses that very least will be ones that will be favored, second favored, third favored. Everybody probably has a horse or two they're looking at as under the radar. But I think a lot of the divisions we have gotten some that have kind of shaken out as rising to the top.
And I ask you this every year, and over these next 10 days, give or take, before the pre-entries, organizing your thoughts, watching either replays or getting familiar. I keep pushing, Seth, that everybody should take the the contender past performances that became available over the last, several days, DRF released, and I'm sure Brisnet's got them out now, too. I think it's imperative that you at least thumb through and organize your thoughts and get familiar with the potential lineups.
I agree completely because it's one time of the year. Well, first of all, it's 2 days and a lot of races, as opposed to coming into the Kentucky Derby, one race, it becomes a little easier to jump on that in the last, kind of sit back and have some ideas, but wait until they make the draw to really start sorting things out. Well, this with the number of horses and number of races, at least, as you say, get that head start, and you can get ideas certainly as horses that are going to show up in many of these races and start to put together and take a look at past performances and take a look at some replays and things like that. I will say I talked to last Saturday morning on the show. I had Andy Serling, and we were kind of talking and agreed that you don't want to get married to anybody at this point because you want to wait and see what happens in the next week and a half or so and then see post positions and whatnot. So I wouldn't jump on anybody and get absolutely married, even if it's a live long shot you like. Just kind of wait and sit back. But you can, again, pull up those past performances, pull up the replays, and start to sort things out as horses that maybe will be rising to the top two or three or four for you in certain divisions and in certain races. And then as we get closer and the fields become more defined and then finally they do the post-position draw, then you've got that head start where, again, with the number of races over 2 days, you're not overwhelmed when you get to that last two or three days.
No doubt. And, one of the things that happens, and I've discussed this, it's a weird, when it comes to Derby and to the Breeders' Cup, because the advanced PPs, these contender PPs, they're typically put out in alphabetical order, and you end up getting mentally, there's a mental imprint that you get when you're looking at them in that order. And it can be dangerous because until there is a lineup, until you know how they're lined up, you get in your mind, you start to make a picture of potential pay scenarios, and but it's based on a faulty premise, which is the way in which they're printed on the page. And that's one of those habits and practice things that players, I think, it's subconscious.
Yeah, and that's a great point, and I'll fold it into, I mentioned earlier, international racing, which has become more popular. I know you talk to Paul Matisse every once in a while. You talk to some of the people from Hong Kong and various venues, and so it's become more popular for people to play and maybe for people who haven't gotten into it yet, but pay attention via your show and think, oh, maybe I'll jump in and play a little Australian racing. You make a great point because it happens down there, too, where the number doesn't match the post position. And so if you are getting into that foreign racing, down in Australia in particular, keep that in mind, that you don't get locked into, as you say, the number one leaving from the one post. Let me figure out the pace scenario here, because number one can easily leave from the 10 post position, and you have to pay extra attention to that when you're watching the foreign races. But as you say, you also have to kind of keep that in mind. You're exactly right. I've done it before, too. You're looking, and you're so ingrained with top of the page is an inside post and bottom of the page is an outside post that it's kind of hard to shake out of that. But you have to kind of keep that in mind as you're looking at the possible contender past performances.
Absolutely. And, speaking of the Euros, what's your general Euro process in terms of evaluating and deciding how they fit?
I used to be much higher. That would be curious. I'd like to know, as you go, maybe you can get closer, maybe you can feel people out. I'd like to know whether this is just me or whether other people feel this way. But I would say, for me, 4 or 5 years ago, it started to change a little bit. To me, 4 or 5 years ago, the Europeans were much more potent to me on the grass. You always went in that direction. And I'm wondering if, over in Europe, they have added money to some of their big races. They've added some big race days there at the end of the season. And so I'm wondering if maybe that plays into it, where some of the better horses now stick around in Europe as opposed to coming over here necessarily. So maybe we're not getting the same quality. Maybe that's it. But I think the American horses are stronger contenders now versus the Europeans, again, over the past 3, 4, 5 years than I used to consider. So now I'm a little more, it used to be one of those things where you looked at the European and there was just an automatic check mark, oh, this is a bonus, the horse is a European. I don't necessarily give that check mark anymore. Now it's more just straight up, let me take a look at what they've done and let me take a look at what the American done and just kind of on an even keel compare them. Whereas, as I say, I would start out automatically giving the European a little bit of an edge in the past. So, as I say, it's evolved a little bit for me now where I'm just kind of looking at them straight up and kind of trying to be aware of, and that's where it helps out if you do pay attention to the foreign races, particularly the European races, try to be aware of the various venues over there and the races and have an idea of which are the important venues, which are the important races, and so you can kind of pull out. And again, also, if you're following on a regular basis, those races, you can look at horses that were also in the race and make decisions there. Oh, this horse beat so-and-so, and so-and-so was a really good European horse this year. So it helps if you can draw that line through horses if you're following European racing a little more regularly.
Well, and that leads to a corollary question, which is the influx and the, particularly this year, the potential for the international horse in the Classic, and not the least of which between Thundersnow and Mendelsohn, and now the screwball of all screwballs, Toast of New York.
And Toast of New York, a couple of weeks ago, had Joe Kristofek on the show. We were kind of talking off the air, and I said, I wish there was a bet for last because I'd put Toast in New York last. And then he kind of, you know, he runs and like, oh, okay, well.
They knew
better than I did. Those kind of horses, though, now you can make decisions. In the past, we've had horses, and I get it. They come over, and they try the classic with a lot of talent on the dirt and some group ones on the resume on the grass, and they've got group ones on the grass. So they've already got that on the resume as far as going on to the career in the breeding shed. And so they say, well, let's go over and try the classic, and, you know, if we do something, we get some money, and if we hit the board, that's going to help out if we win even better. And helps, you know, the value, again, in that next career in the breeding shed. Those were the kind, though, that I was willing to take a shot against. But if you have a little dirt form that you can look at, and now with the three you've mentioned, we do. I just, again, handicap them kind of straight up, and all three you mentioned. Toast of New York to me is still kind of one that, you know, I think you'd have to twist my arm to play a little bit. But I thought Thunderstone, Mendelsohn, I have not been big on, but I thought that performance a couple of weeks ago, given, you know, he and Diversify being out there with those fractions, I thought that was a pretty good performance by him, but it was clearly a good performance by Thunder Snow. So both of those, with what we've seen on the dirt in their careers so far, particularly a couple of weeks ago, are both horses that I would probably, you know, consider in the mix. We'll see as it gets closer. Toast of New York is a little more iffy. But as I say, the kind we've seen in the past where they're giving the first shot on the dirt in the Breeders' Cup Classic, I'm willing to take a pass on those, but these have some dirt form already.
And the funniest thing for me, and I'm doing the Breeders' Cup Classic again for Express Bet, for the wagering guide, and for years, my approach when it came to, you know, the Coolmore horses or any others that turned up for the Classic, I was always dead against. And then Toast of New York and Declaration of War, just based on the way they, you know, the way they moved, and there was just a feel to them that either or were going to be very competitive. And I ended up picking both, which I kind of shocked myself. And here we are this year where now the question becomes, if you're going to take one of those, how short a price are they going to be?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the reasons that I liked Declaration of War and Toast of New York those years was because they were going to be square prices. They were going to be what I considered to be overlays coming in, and that they were going to outrun their odds. So this is a much different look. And, of course, you know, we're going to hear just a cacophony of questions about both Mendelsohn and Thunder Snow off their last visits to Churchill, the disastrous Derby tries. So there's obviously the conditions are going to be very different. 3 year old spring of the 3 year old year versus now, you know, these horses much more much more experienced, but people are going to be asking that question, and knowing that Mendelsohn is high strung, under the best of circumstances.
Thunder Snow, though, to me, if I'm handicapping and I'm on him and I'm thinking of that Churchill, my handicapping take on him was that was kind of a freakish, and it just was freakish. And then after that, so that to me was one that it would be hard to attribute to the track. It just seemed far too screwy a situation to be. He didn't like the track. You know, if he had run 15th, but ran all the way around, then I think you could start to scratch your head and maybe he didn't like the track service. But even in those situations, even if he had run 15th, to me, before I start saying, I think that's a thing. I think there's horse for a course, and I think there's negative horse for a course. I think if you can say horses like tracks, I think you can assume horses maybe don't like tracks. And you see those kind of performances. But before I make that decision, before I really jump away from a horse, I want to see a couple of poor performances or a couple of really good performances before I say horse for a course. Because otherwise, you don't know whether you've just seen kind of an aberration. But Thunder Snow, that was a little too freaky for me to hang my hat on that as being Churchill Downs necessarily, as opposed to maybe something just screwy that particular day.
Well, plenty of questions to look forward to, and some questions maybe today. You got any answers about Keeneland today?
I looked at the pick six, if you want to go through that. Or a
Why not?
Or a pick four, or whatever you want to look at.
Pick four, pick five. I just put up Gus's look at the pick five at Keeneland, and there were a couple of important scratches, as it happens, out of the stake, out of the Jessamine, that my gal, Betty, came out, notably the Atfield. So I think you ended up with, let me see, did No Mo Templar get in? I think she did. Yeah. So start, we'll get to that. And I don't know, you want to start in the fourth or whatever you want to do.
Yeah,
go ahead.
We
got time.
Fourth. And you can alert me to scratches because there's no Wi-Fi here anymore. So I was not able to pull up the scratches. So you can alert me if I mention a scratched horse. Fourth race. I had an 11, 2, 7, and 10. The 11 is Floss Dancer. Goes out first time for Al Stahl. I just thought the horse looked a little bit interesting. I don't know whether there's a whole lot on the breeding that you can really suss out. 6-1, given that, the fact, you know, Al does okay first out. That jumped out at me. I thought some of the workouts were pretty good. But I don't know whether there's a lot on the breeding you can hang your hat on. And because of that, I thought this horse might tick up a point or two and then becomes maybe a little bit interesting. So I used Floss Dancer on top. I went down to the number 2, South of France, in the second spot. It's Todd Pletcher. I thought it was an interesting scenario here for the Pletcher horse. Started the career in Gulfstream in April, went up a couple of starts at Belmont, back down to Gulfstream and Palm Beach Downs late summer, and then they come up here and get some class relief going in for a tag at Keeneland. So I thought that horse was a little bit interesting. And then Stealing Sunshine in the third spot. It's Brad Cox, some nice workouts underneath, second career start, a little class relief. So I had 11, 2, 7, and 10.
All right.
Want me to keep moving on?
Yeah, I didn't look at the fourth. I looked at the fifth, the sixth,
okay.
Seventh, and eighth.
Fifth race for me, 4, 7, 10, and 5. The number 4, Dancing All Night. Shug horse coming out of a couple of starts up in Saratoga. And I thought the start 2 back was pretty good looking. And I think we can maybe get a little bit closer to that today than last. The last one looks like a little bit of an aberration given what we saw in the 2 starts before that. So I'm looking to get closer to what we saw 2 and 3 starts back. So Dancing All Night on top. I went to Civil Union in the second spot. The Chad runner that broke the maiden up at Saratoga, career debut. Did it in okay fashion, I think, says this horse probably a good fit with this bunch. And then I went to the number 10, Napier, who broke the maiden in the career debut for Brad Cox over at Ellis. And you know, that was a pretty good-looking race, too, and probably won with some trouble, according to the trouble line. So one that the horse may be able to build off on and move forward. So for me in the fifth, 4, 7, 10, and 5.
I'll give you a ridiculous horse, not as a win candidate, but as a horse that is going to clunk along and could be, if you're a try or super player, the 2, Market Top, the Brian Williamson, Mrs. Tara homebred, the Cape Blanco filly, on form or on at least on figs, it looks, you know, just ordinary and uninteresting, 30-1. That race, 2 back, you know, she's dirtied up in here because of an off-the-turf try. But that race 2 back on the yielding at Arlington when she got beat a length and was second. This horse is going to be an overlay, Market Top. She hasn't won in 2 years. So we're not thinking about a win here. And she's just going to clunk along, but she will pick up pieces and could be third or fourth at Boxcars. So if you're building try and super tickets, use the 2.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue against anybody taking a price given what we've seen so far at Keeneland.
It's going to be the thing is there's not I don't I mean if there was pace if it looked like there was potential for this to collapse even a little then maybe she's worth a wind saver, but you're up against that a little bit. Strictly as a horse that, you know, don't just put a line through it. This is the kind of horse that makes your triples and your supers. So, FYI.
All right, I'll move on to six.
Yep.
But this is a really nice race. I mean, this is, you know, kind of stakes quality, small stakes quality, but certainly there's stakes performers in here and some horses on layoffs that have shown promise and whatnot. So I could have made an argument for a bunch of them in here. I wound up 9-12. 1-6. I put Honorable Treasure on top for Ken McPeak up the last race up at Saratoga. And it has the look of maybe one that's, again, maybe that's an aberration because it's a really good number, a lifetime best buyer. But I'm just kind of looking at it as maybe the horse was primed to kind of broke through, and if that form holds a little bit, I think Honorable Treasure can put a couple together. Went out to the number 12, Smart Remark, has a little bit of early positional speed, 8-1, comes out of a race at Kentucky Downs, and I've been saying on TV the past week and a half or so, I love these Kentucky Downs shippers as they go out and make their neck and start at other venues. Even in races where they go turf to dirt, I think they've done well. But one of the stakes at Keeneland this weekend, there was a couple of Kentucky Downs shippers ran 1-2 for close to $1,000 exacta. And so the Kentucky Downs shippers, they can offer some value, and to me they're interesting. That's part of the reason I like Smart Remark. And then in the third spot I went to the number one, who is, as I'm scrolling through, oh, Shang Royal, Royale, also coming out of Kentucky Downs. Nice third in a little stakes race over there. Got toasted in the quick call up at Saratoga two back, but that was over that track that it's hard to know what to make. That track was so screwy some days because of the weather we had. So I'm going to kind of draw a line through that and go more to the Kentucky Downs race last time. So on the 6th, 9-12, 1-6.
Yeah, Honorable Treasure is going to be focused on, and I suppose the horse to beat. I'll give you Stanley Huff, and we're watching and frankly we're openly rooting for Stanley, and he's got the one win so far on the comeback with the Sagamore horses, and he had a very good effort at Churchill a month ago by Barry Lee, and 10-1 feels like a fit here, and a bit of an overlay. Was second behind Cowboy Karma, and at 10-1, I want Barry Lee on my tickets as well. And we had Dale Romans earlier. He seems confident that Dak Attack will come back running as well. He's going to certainly save ground. There's a decent pace here. There's not a spirited pace battles to set up closers too well. Let's talk about the feature, the Grade 2, the Jessamine, and this is a good group. I've been looking forward to this, and the horse that is going to get a lot of attention and bet down off that 6-1 Concrete Rose, who was pretty darn spectacular up here at Saratoga, breaking the maiden at first asking.
I went 2-4, 10-14, and again, I'm kind of married to these Kentucky Downs horses at what I think are prices, and I think this horse will be a price because the buyer figure, but the Brad Cox trainee looked pretty good in a $134,000 maiden special over at Kentucky Downs, and that's part of the reason I like that meet. I think it's salty, they're big fields, it's not just the track, and maybe they come off with fitness, but in a maiden race like this, you know, there's a field of 11, and it was a pretty good-looking win, albeit, again, the buyer is in the mid-50s. But I'll take a little shot at that one at a 15-1 morning line price over Concrete Rose, who, again, was just absolutely solid up at Saratoga in the career debut. The second-place finisher comes back and wins next out. The buyer figure was very good for a two-year-old filly at that time of year, so logical there. And then I went out to the number 10, Fierce Scarlet, Chad Brown trainee, couple of starts so far. Broke through with a nice improved effort last time, and if we get a repeat of that, or if the horse continues to move forward a few points, clearly going to be in the mix. So for me, it was 2, 4, 10, and 14.
The scratches that we alluded to, you can take out Moravia, the 9, Georgia Bro, and My Gal Betty, as noted, the nice Atfield, and No Mo Temper, the Cassie Mark Stanley runner. That means that the 16, Bell Laura, for Norm Cassie, will run. Winner last time in the second career start in the Mucho Macho Man Philly. That was actually bred by Dean and Patty Reeves and purchased by GU Racing Stable. So we'll be out posted. You know, Monkey's Uncle, that 14, it is getting plenty of consideration. But I would be a little, you know, being out posted there is no bargain. I guess the good news is that, at least for Monkey's Uncle, that she's going to come from off it anyway, and there is pace in here. There are horses that, you know, that will want to be on or near. We had Ken McPeak the other day. That Princess Carolina, you know, out of the wonderful Bob Holtis Pure Clan. Those of you that remember Pure Clan and what a wonderful stake or she was for Holtis, the late Bob Holtis, and he was encouraged. Both of it. You know McPeak. He's encouraged by anything he sends out, because he's got lights, camera, action for Walking L as well in here. This will be a lot of fun, and I've got a My Gal Betty was of real interest to me, so I've got to sort of reevaluate what I'm going to do in here. Let's go to the nightcap.
I want to go back to Ken for a second, because I taped him last Friday and put it on Saturday morning. But we talked about the fifth race at Keeneland on Sunday, nice little maiden special. Harvey Wallbanger looked good off of that second up at Saratoga that got a little bit of buzz, certainly.
Well, we talked up. We gave everybody a heads up on Harvey Wallbanger when we had Hal Lerner. Quick, you've got about a minute. The 20, non-2 to close out the card.
I have a 2, 3, the 7, and 8. House of Commons for Mike Maker has a little bit of early speed, gets some class relief. I think that speed's going to be more potent with the drop down into the claiming ranks. Went to the 3. Ron Moquette having a pretty good meet at Keeneland, and so that attracted my attention on Zip Van Winkle. The horse comes up an okay try against a little bit better at Churchill. It was back in May, so there's a little bit of a layoff to be concerned about, but again, about the trainer going well, Moquette. And then I went out to the number 7, Teletap, who, again, a little bit of early positional speed, probably going to fit nicely with this group for Steve Asmussen. So 2, 3, 7, and 8.
Throw in the 6 for Billy Gowan, Strolling.
Wouldn't argue there. Yeah,
I'm going to throw Stroll in there. All right. Well, this was great. Seth, I hope we distracted you, and I hope the family, everybody, best wishes on an emotional day for the Merrow clan in Falmouth.
Appreciate it. And as I say, we'll say goodbye for you and Tina as well.
And we'll say goodbye for Casey and for everybody.
I'll also mention the clock is on the wall. That's one of the last things I'm going to take down.
Nice. You got my password game?
Oh, that's a good question. I did. Yeah. No. Yes.
Oh, boy.
No, I know where they are. But I think they went last time I was up here, so I know where they are.
All right. I love it. Seth Merrow, everybody, for the last time from the family home in Falmouth, Maine. For Seth, we had Sid Fernando, of course, Dale Romans for a fun visit, and Pete Fornatel from London. So we were in London, we were in Maine, and we were in Ellery, South Carolina for Gory Smith, Frank Smith, which was really fun, as we honored Denise Boudreaux. Good luck today. Should be a fun day of racing. Keeneland, of course, and much, much more. Back with you tomorrow. Haskin, Lenny Shulman, and a big announcement. And our usual Thursday hoo-ha. Talk to you tomorrow.
You have to go killing all the bees.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Brown Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Brown Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.